98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf's Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by 72 Sold. Get the price for your home at 72sold.com.
Feeling a lot better after one game in Texas for the D-backs. We got a lot to get to in your Rush Hour Reboot. Training camp starting yesterday. Suns in a scrimmage yesterday. Maloney, go.
So Merrill Kelly took a no-hitter into the seventh inning, leading the D-backs to a 4-1 win over the Rangers. Here's D-backs manager Torrey Lovello.
I thought Merrill Kelly did exactly what we needed, and he basically carried us on his back through the entire day. We played downhill baseball. We scored some runs early, but this was really centered around what Merrill was able to do, throwing up a ton of zeros.
Your thoughts on his outing. Did you expect that? I mean, Wolf, you did. You predicted it.
Yeah.
What?
Pretty much yesterday, didn't he say?
I called out Merrill Kelly. No, I called out
Merrill.
Yeah,
he didn't say he was going to do it, but he said we're all counting on it.
But I will tell you, based on earnings right now, Merrill Kelly finished strong last year. Go back and look at his last four or five starts somewhere in there. He picked up right where he left off, only better. He was dominant yesterday. It was so refreshing to actually watch him go about his business, and he gave this team exactly what they needed. He was the aloe vera on sunburned skin.
I got to tell you, there's no way. I thought Merrill Kelly was going to have an outing that was good because he's a fighter and he's a battler, and I thought he was going to attack the Rangers. No way did I think it was going to be a no-hitter above three innings. Okay, no way did I think he was going to shut them down. But I did think he was going to put them in a position to win. Merrill Kelly was absolutely fantastic. And what I like about it is you never thought a Mad Bum, a Luke Weaver, a Zach Gallen, a Robbie Ray needed a wake-up call. But there is a little bit of, if he can do it, what are you going to be able to do about it? And the Rangers are struggling offensively. Mad Bum can't let them off the mat this afternoon.
So that brings me to the D-backs look to make it two wins in a row this afternoon against the Rangers, and Madison Bumgarner will be on the hill making his second start of the season. Here's D-backs pitching coach Matt Hergis.
I'll say this candidly, I don't think he was great. I don't think he was great at all. He just makes pitches when he needs to, and he got through it. Shoot, he was one pitch away from giving the six scoreless. So that 102 pitch to Hosmer hurt. It hurt.
So what do you expect to see from Mad Bum this afternoon?
I think we're going to see Madison Bumgarner take the ball and go out and give the Diamondbacks exactly what they need. Again, I think we're going to see something similar to his first start, where he, for the most part, was very, very ace-like through five innings. And hopefully he'll not make a mistake like he did in that sixth inning. And hopefully he'll get him into the eighth and ninth inning, somewhere in there. Get seven innings of quality work, and that would reach my expectation for him.
You know, Mad Bum is kind of a strange guy in the sense that he is the type of guy that would tell everybody, relax, it's one game. But he's also one of the most intense dudes on every single pitch. So he has that balance of competitive fire in every single thing he does, and then yet at the same time, hey, it's over, move on, let's get on with it. But I don't think, you know, he still is battling this not a good pitcher anymore away from Oracle Park. He still has to be able to prove he can do it on the road, and he hasn't done that in a couple years now, and they need him to do that in this 60-game season.
Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury spoke on a variety of topics yesterday when he joined the media over Zoom, including how they can properly prepare with no preseason.
It lines up very similarly to how we had it in college. And so just being a year removed from that, how we built up, there were no preseason games. You just know what you got and not what anybody else has. And so there's definitely going to be some anxiety heading into that first week. And, you know, it's going to be new for everybody. We'll do the best we can to maximize those padded practices.
Do you think this will actually be a good thing for Cliff?
Well, everything is a good thing for Cliff at this point right now, because I think he's still learning, and I think he would tell you that he's still learning. It's one of the great attributes of Cliff Kingsbury is his humility, right? Very smart, but very humble. I think he's still learning right now. So Listen, this is going to be a good thing, I think, ultimately, that the preseason has been canceled, because he's got a very talented team. He's got a talented team. It's going to come down to how many padded practices they actually have and how many live reps he actually has to get this team ready to go. That is going to be the key to the entire camp.
I love this for Cliff Kingsbury, because what is the advantage that every single coach, save in Carolina possibly, has over Cliff Kingsbury? And maybe even in the New York Giants. And that is experience. But at least in the Giants, you're talking about a special teams coach that's been in the pros. Matt Rhule spent a little time in the pros, but was coming out of Baylor. This is a situation where you talk about leveling the playing field. Not even Bill Belichick has ever experienced something like this. So now everybody's on equal footing, and it's how do you adapt? Well, Cliff Kingsbury has a more recent history of doing exactly what he's got to do now versus any other coach. It actually eliminates his inexperience weakness. I think this is a great thing for Cliff.
The Phoenix Suns wrapped up their scrimmage schedule with a 117-106 victory over the Raptors. So where are the Suns as they head into the season restart?
We're going to find out. You know, I think I'd love to say, you know, we're at a certain level right now. But I think, as I just told the guys, we're going to play against desperate teams in the next 8 games. And so we're going to find out exactly where we are.
Where do you think the Suns are?
Oh, you know what, honestly, once again, are they going to go out and be 6-2 and give themselves an opportunity to get into the postseason? I don't think so, ladies and gentlemen. I really don't care either. What I want to see them do is get better. That's what I want to see them do. I like the way this team is competing right now in the scrimmages that we've seen. I like the way they're going about their business and bringing the intensity. I like the way they're very active with their hands, and their defense, I think, has been better overall. They're moving the ball so much better. They're playing exactly the way that I think Monty Williams wants them to play. I like all of that. I have no expectation other than this team getting better in 8 games.
I have watched a ton of these scrimmages, not all of them, but a ton of these scrimmages. And I mean, I've watched all the Sun scrimmages, but I mean every scrimmage that's been going on, I've watched most of them. The Phoenix Suns are the most desperate team in Orlando, the way they play. Now, it's a summer camp, and to the other teams, it's a scrimmage, but they are the ones that are listening to their coach, playing with desperation almost every play, and bringing a lot more intensity than any other team. Now what happens when everybody else ramps up? I don't know. But I like the position that the Suns are in from an intensity standpoint more than just about anybody else. Now, like Wolf said, is that going to translate to a playoff berth? I don't think so. But when I look at the teams that they're chasing, the only one I put in the category of playing close to as intense is Memphis. And that's the one you've got to be able to get within 4 games of. But they're playing more intense basketball than anybody else between them and the Pelicans. Or excuse me, between them and the Memphis Grizzlies.
Benches cleared last night as Dodgers' Joe Kelly taunted the Astros.
Oh, my. Okay. Oh, my. 3-0 pitch sails over the head of Alex Bregman.
There might have been a little intent behind that one.
Swing and a miss. Kelly able to get Correa and strand 2 runners on base. And a little talking in between innings between Joe Kelly and the Astros dugout.
Do you have a problem with retribution against the Astros?
You know what, honestly, back when I played the game of football, based on onions, I hate saying that, but it's the truth. Players policed players. You took care of all your woes, all of your problems on the field, and it was expected. Retribution was something that you would bring on somebody that cheap-shotted you or cheap-shotted a teammate. I am a big believer in players policing players, so to speak, in any sport. But that's really not the way that it is anymore, and I lament the fact that it's not like that anymore. Where suddenly you get Joe Kelly and what Joe Kelly did, and it is what a disgusting display of aggression.
I look at this and say, listen, no matter how anybody feels about it, you can argue all you want. Welcome to the game. There's a lot of people who go, they got to stop throwing at each other. Listen, this is baseball. No matter how much you whine about it, no matter how much you argue about it, This is baseball. This is the men that play the game, and this is how they handle their business in the game of baseball. The only thing I don't like about it is Kelly's reaction when he's walking off the diamond. Quit. I mean, if either stand on the mound and be a man if you're going to mouth off, or shut up. I mean, Kelly's being a big-time wuss here, and he hasn't been called out enough for it because he's doing his little yapping trying to get attention while he's walking away because he's scared of what might happen to him. If you're going to throw at people, be a man and stand there. And if you're going to not throw at people and it's accidental, then keep your mouth shut and walk off. Then I would be arguing anti-Astro. And no, I'm never in a position where I'm in any way going to defend the Astros. I applaud the fact that the Dodgers weren't afraid of a 60-game schedule and had the courage to go after them in that situation. And clearly, with a 3-0 count, when you throw behind somebody, that's the definition of intentional. The only thing I saw dumber in that situation was Clayton Kershaw with the mask. Clayton Kershaw walks out with his mask, but whenever he wants to yell at somebody during the yelling brawl, he pulled his mask down to start yelling. I got to say, Clayton, isn't that the whole point of the mask? That if you're going to be yelling, wear your mask? Thank you.
He's like Joe Kelly.
Your little dog, too!
Yeah.
Barking that dog that barks, the little dog that barks.
Joe Kelly's barking his way off the mound instead of standing there. Come on, Joe.
Your little dog, too, Joe.
I'm not a Joe Kelly fan. Could you tell? But stand there.
That was soft, dude.
Stand there. Or don't mouth off. I don't mind anything he does, because that's in the spirit of competition, throwing at guys or playing the game the way he's playing. There's nothing wrong with that. Then just walk off. But when you mouth off as you're walking away, that really says, I want to pretend to be tough. It's a fake tough guy. Coming up next.
Don't make me do the barking dog again.
We're all excited for Mad Bum, Robbie Ray, Zach Gallen. And yet, none of them produced like Kelly? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. That was nice. Diamondbacks 4-1 winner yesterday, and Merrill Kelly.
Oh,
what's really fantastic about what Merrill Kelly did is there's some frustration when you listen to the pitching coach of the Diamondbacks pregame. This is pregame now, going into Texas. In their game last night, in which Matt Hergis is talking about the San Diego Padres series and says
100% they're not backing it up. Whether it's trying to be too fine, it's whether it's giving the hitters too much credit. I think both of those things for sure. Ultimately, I mean, our message as an organization is, bottom line, the best pitchers in the game throw more strikes than anybody else. And it makes life a lot easier when you're getting ahead, when you're attacking, when you're winning the first three pitches. That's kind of been, I mean, it's been all of our mottos. It's everyone's motto that's in the game of pitching. And we haven't done that.
The one thing is you got to feel for pitchers when they have a bad defense. I really understand guys that go on the mound and they'll never say it publicly. I don't believe in the guys behind me. I need to be able to strike guys out, get hitters to chase. I need to set you up with other pitches because I can't count on the guys behind me. Did anybody see Cole Calhoun yesterday?
Yeah.
Or not yesterday, but it's Sandy. The face plant.
Yes.
That's how much he cares. Does anybody question the glove of Ketel Marte or Nick Ahmed up the middle? You've got these guys. Pitch to contact, attack, attack, attack. And there's Matt Hergis right from the beginning. We are not attacking enough. And of all things, Wolf, it takes the number five starter to come out and drop the hammer like that?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Douglas. Merrill Kelly was a star yesterday. Just huge. Exactly what the Arizona Diamondbacks needed. He took the ball. How professional was approach in attacking the strike zone?
How professional.
It really was. It was refreshing to actually watch him. 7 2/3, 3 hits, 1 base on ball, base and onions. Gave up 1 earned run, a home run to Rougned Odor. I'm so sorry, man, but that was a bomb into right field as well. And every time I see Odor Basinonians, all I can think of is his straight right hand that he gave Joey Bats. That's it. It makes me laugh every time. As a matter of fact, Bear, what do you say you go ahead and you give me a beat right here? Because you know what? Joey Bats thought he was going to do something with Rougned Odor. He thought he was going to do something, and he didn't get it done. It reminds me, the year was 1992. I was playing for the Cleveland Browns, my friends. We were practicing with and against the New York Giants because Belichick and Parcells thought it'd be a good idea. We lined up an extra point field goal and hit some live reps, right? Full go at full speed. I was a left wing on extra point and field goal. The Giants lined up Pepper Johnson on my inside shoulder with a skimmer outside of him. He knew this was going to be interesting, right? I knew he was going to be interesting, and he knew this was going to be interesting because Pepper and I had multiple collisions on the field and heated conversations as well, playing twice a year in the same division. And sure enough, on the snap, Pepper Johnson didn't attack my inside shoulder. Oh, no. Trying to reduce the edge for the skimmer. Oh, no. He attacked me right down the middle. He jacked me up and double-chopped me right in the face. And I knew exactly what he was doing. I turned around as everybody else was getting into their stance and lining up for the next rep. And I looked at Bill Belichick and I said, I'm not blocking him, Bill. I'm not blocking the skimmer, Bill. And I was pointing literally to the skimmer. Belichick looked at me like I was insane. And I shook his head and he shook his head. Ladies and gentlemen, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to say? That's what he did. He looked at me like, what's your problem? Well, I turned and I got my two-point stance. I got on the wing, and on the snap of the ball, I ran at Pepper Johnson like it was an ISO. He was the Mike linebacker, and I was a fullback, and I jacked Pepper up, put the spot above my eyebrows, right on the spot below his lips, and knocked him onto the goofy wagon. Well, you know what? I was going to exact retribution. I was going to silence the talker and stun the stunner. I had bad intentions. And Pepper Johnson kicked the dog out of me. Only the second fight I ever lost in my NFL career. And that fight reminds me of Rougned Odor and Jose Bautista. The year was 1992. I was playing for the Cleveland Browns. Oh, my goodness. One of the funniest moments in the history of professional sports. Joey Bats getting hit with a straight right hand from Rougned Odor.
It was. I couldn't believe yesterday. Critique of Steve Berthiaume, play-by-play voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks. On multiple occasions yesterday, he talked about Rougned Odor being a small guy with a lot of power, and he never mentioned the punch.
Never.
I mean, come on, Bert. If you're going to bring, and listen, it's you set it up well because he then hits a solo jack to end the no-no. But I got to tell you. This is something where if you're going to talk about how much power he can pack as a little guy, you got to mention the punch.
You
have that, to. That punch was to have a perfectly formed punch that Teddy Atlas is going to be proud of.
Yes.
In the middle of a Major League Baseball game, yes. And the transfer of weight and to have that little of a guy be able to put that much force into a punch and then to actually see and you just watch the replay of Dodgers Astros. The most pointless thing in the world is a baseball fight. And Odor is saying, no, the point stops here.
Unbelievable, man. Every time I see it, I roar. So funny.
We're going to talk to Merrill Kelly about that game coming up at 9:15. Have an exclusive conversation with Merrill coming up live from Texas, so we're excited about that. He'll join us at 9:15. Give us about 20 minutes, and the assistant GM, Jared Porter, will join us, who went 7-for-7 yesterday, if you didn't know. Jared Porter did. He was on camera 7 times sitting behind the on-deck circle, had his mask on every time.
Oh!
That's big time. That's big
that
time.
That is nice, Jared.
You know how many people are paying attention to stuff like that, so that was good. But we got a second. We got to talk about Arizona Cardinals in between before we go back to D-backs with Jared Porter. And it's not very often. A coach says, there's no position battle here when everybody else thought there was. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Here we go, Basinonians. Gather on the transistor and press the ear. The Doug and Wolf Show, Savages of the Morning, broadcasting on a Quasimodo Wednesday. Yes, Master.
We knew it was coming, and it's hitting home just like we thought it would. Coyotes' last scrimmage before the playoffs start for them tomorrow. Suns' last scrimmage before the 8-game regular season ends was last night, and boy, did Bridges look fantastic.
Wow.
Merrill Kelly was unbelievable yesterday. He joins us coming up at 9:15 before the D-backs try to get to 500 at 1 o'clock this afternoon against the Rangers. That'll be on ESPN 620 AM. Our front office focus with Jared Porter, the assistant GM, is coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. And yesterday was also kind of the start of NFL training camp. I say kind of because it was basically, depending on your team, you're not allowed in the building and maybe have Zoom meetings outside, maybe send you back home for Zoom. You know, every team was a little different, but it's testing yesterday, testing today, quarantine at home Thursday, test Friday, and if you have three negatives, now come on in for your physical, and now if you pass your physical, you can finally start getting ready for the football season.
Which will be strength and conditioning, of course, right?
Yes.
For weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to be an acclimation period like we've never seen before in any training camp.
It's very true. So it's totally different. So Cliff Kingsbury talked about a lot of different things yesterday in his, in a sense, opening training camp press conference, which was very strange because it's still Zoom and it will be for quite some time, and it'll probably be that way for at least half of this season and maybe even longer for this to be our interaction with Cliff Kingsbury. And it drifted into the subject of the offensive line.
We're excited about that depth that you just mentioned. I think we didn't expect to have Josh around there in the third round. We had him rated a lot higher than that. So to pick him up there was huge. To get Marcus back, who has been an elite tackle in this league for a bunch of years, had some tough injuries the last couple, but get him back and feeling good is huge. And then Kelvin is a guy who started in this league, was a captain with the Jets, and can play right or left tackle. So to have that type of depth sitting there with Justin Murray, who came a long way last year at right tackle when he was kind of forced into duty, we feel like we're in a lot better place this year to start the season than we were last year, and that's what you want to see. You want to see that type of progression, particularly with your offensive line.
That was kind of a question about the depth and the right tackle position, and he didn't get specific. So then he was kind of asked more of a specific question about, is this an open competition at right tackle?
We discussed that. We want to see how Marcus looks. He says he feels the best he's felt in a long time, having all these extra months of rehab, not being forced back anything, may be huge for him. And so he has been a really good player in this league a long time. And if he can start off at that level, then he's going to slide right back in there at right. But we're excited to have some options too. Like I said, Justin's development last year, drafting Josh, signing Kelvin, that's going to be huge. But we expect Marcus to be able to slide in there and do a nice job right away.
Boy, that really is. First of all, Cliff Kingsbury is telling you the truth, Basinonians, because Marcus Gilbert is a flat-out great player when he's healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this right now. My brother told me when the Arizona Cardinals, when they actually signed Marcus Gilbert, he said, Ron, he's a Pro Bowl tackle right now. If he can stay healthy, he's a Pro Bowl tackle, and he's a dog, right? Well, Marcus Gilbert is a leader in that offensive line room to begin with, and he is a dog the way he goes about his business. This coming from Sean Coogler, who is a dog himself, ladies and gentlemen, and appreciates an offensive lineman that has an aggressive nature, and that's Marcus Gilbert. Marcus Gilbert will be your starting right tackle if he's healthy. So he's telling the truth, number one. I think it's also maybe some insight into this training camp. This training camp is going to be unlike any other training camp, and that's not going to be a shock to anybody that is listening right now because of the pandemic, right? A known commodity is going to be valued over the unknown, over a rookie, over a guy that is unproven. That known commodity is going to actually have a little bit more juice. And because of that, I don't know how many camp battles you're really going to have, because I think training camp overall is not going to give somebody the opportunity to beat somebody out.
Because he kind of squashed what a lot of people thought was going to be a camp battle right there.
Yeah,
with,
right.
With that answer.
And not only that, too, why not just go ahead and raise the bar for any rookie as well? We were talking about this earlier, but to me, this is just coaching. It's what you do right now. Rookie, you know what, rookie? You come in with all the accolades. You come in, Josh Jones. By the way, I think Josh Jones is going to be a great tackle for a decade or more in this league. I do believe that, right? But anyways, getting back to it, yeah, you come in, rookie. You got a lot to prove, buddy. You got a lot to prove. We're going to, yeah, of course he's the starter. What are you going to do about it? You going to compete, Josh? I mean, why not make a rookie work for everything he gets? Of course.
There was one question, Wolf, that you have to hear. Like, you think you know Cliff Kingsbury? And every now and then, because so many of his answers are pretty static, but every now and then, he opens up in a way that you just, like, whoa, you don't expect. And his level of accountability for himself, you know it, but it's a lot stronger than maybe sometimes that you realize. It was a very interesting question asked to him about kind of in line of the Marlins. Because, you know, like Torrey Lovello said, in a 60-game season, I have to do this. Torrey, I know you know this, but we have no idea if you're having a 60-game season. We don't know how things – the Marlins will not have a 60-game season. We don't know if the Phillies are going to have a 60-game season. So the question was asked about if something happens and there's a break in the schedule and there's some – and how have – what have you learned from the bye week where you struggled to how you're going to ramp back up if there's any kind of longer break than what you expect this year? It was kind of an interesting question to relate that terrible Rams game that they had after the bye in what could be a 2-week absence or 3, something like that. How do you ramp up from the bye this week? And listen to what Cliff Kingsbury said. Tell me if it still sticks in his craw the way they played against the Rams when asked, what have you worked on or what did you learn from last year's bye week?
Yeah, do everything opposite of whatever we did last year. That's been my case to the coaches. It was that was the one game where I felt like we didn't coach well, we didn't play well, we just didn't look like the team we'd been the other 15 weeks. And you come off a bye right into a Thanksgiving week type scenario. It was just kind of the perfect storm. And for a first year head coach in the NFL, I probably didn't handle it real well. So we're going to definitely we've talked to other teams how they've done different things throughout that bye week, and we're definitely going to adjust that. Moving forward.
His humility, once again, his humility is what stuns me. It really is. You know,
that's a strong answer.
No, it is. It is. It's who he is, right? He's his own harshest critic. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why he's so successful, because he is his harshest critic. It beats him up, and he wants to learn. He wants to get better. He's a super smart guy, but his humility is what's going to make him stay, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to make him stick in this league, because he's not actually trying to prove how great of a coach he is. What he's trying to do is absorb and learn everything that he possibly can so that he can be the best that he can. And because of that, he's going to be a good coach in this league for years to come.
Obviously, it's not all on him, but listen, I mean, you could tell from that answer. We're 7 months, 8 months removed, or even longer, 10 months removed from that bye week, and yet it's still sticking with him. It still sticks with him.
Yeah.
And then
and
he says, hey, we talked to a lot of other teams, and I think it had a lot to do with me being a first-year head coach. And that's a really strong answer to kind of a simple question about the Marlins, you know? It really shows you something that's with him. Coming up next, all right, can we really go crazy and say Merrill Kelly saved the season? We'll ask General Manager Jared Porter next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Doug and Wolf Mornings on the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
Jared Porter is joining Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Assistant General Manager to Mike Hazen and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Jared, I don't know if you ever did it in T-ball or Little League, but you were 7-for-7 last night with your great seats on behind the on-deck circle. You were on camera about 7 times, and all 7 times you were wearing a mask. So you get all the positive grade. You got an 80 grade yesterday on your performance. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. Thanks. Yeah, health and safety certainly been at the forefront here for us as we try to navigate through this season. So I'm happy to hear you saw me with the mask on. Appreciate it.
Jared, how difficult overall is it to socially distance, right? How difficult has it been for you guys personally?
You know, it actually hasn't been that difficult. You know, from day one, we've had team meetings, you know, led by Torrey, led by Mike, Ken Crenshaw, Roger Riley, just, you know, really talking about the importance of, you know, wearing masks, socially distancing, you know, being smart when you're outside of your household, when you're at home. You know, once you start doing those things and it becomes a habit, when I don't have a mask on now, it feels strange. So, I think as a group, we're really striving to do a good job with it. And so far, so good.
Jared, there's a funny quote we play a lot here on the Doug and Wolf Show.
It's the first week of the season.
And that is Tony La Russa losing his mind as manager of the Cardinals when Albert Pujols started the year in a slump. And he starts yelling at the media, it's the first week of the season. I ask you this very strange question. You were tied for first place going into San Diego in late July. Something everybody would want to be tied for first going into late July, and you kind of laid an egg. Yet it's
the first week of the season.
So how do you look at the 1-3 start when it is the first week of the season, and yet you ended up three games out after a series in July?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Of course, I mean, you go 1-3 anywhere in a series, and you're not pleased, you're not happy. You know, I think we went into that series. San Diego played well. You know, our Torrey's talked about it. You know, I think our hitters were overly aggressive. We didn't really have a clear offensive approach that we were able to execute against San Diego, and our pitchers weren't quite aggressive enough. So, you know, we've been working at it. I think some really good meetings. We have a really talented team. You know, we feel like we have a talented team really the whole way through. And last night was certainly a much more solid game. I think we saw close to 170 pitches. Merrill Kelly was very aggressive and efficient as a pitcher. I mean, it was, of course, 1-3 isn't the start we were looking for, but there's a lot of baseball left, and we think we have a really good team.
On that note right there, Jared, I got a fill-in-the-blank question for you here. When Merrill Kelly does blank, you know he's on.
I think mixes pitches, you know, aggressively. He has four pitches that we feel like are all average or better. You know, he's throwing his changeup harder this year, which is good. He's actually getting swings and misses with a hard changeup, which is great because it can also become a ground ball pitch. And then I noticed last night, maybe it was the angle I was sitting at. I've never really sat that low before for a major league game. Just the explosive life on his four seam fastball with kind of some rise and some cut to it. And he had those San Diego hitters off balance all night. Mm-hmm. I guess another answer to your question was when Merrill Kelly is aggressive. Like, he was aggressive last night. He attacked him. I know him and Dan Heron and Matt Hergis and Mike Fetters had some really good conversations before a start, and he certainly took the ball and did a great job for us.
For those of you who don't know, Jared Porter's also a hockey guy. He played college hockey, and it was about last year, Jared, we had Shane Doan on the show, and I'll never forget him saying one time, when you have too young of a team, guys are competitive, they fight, they want to win, but they're also looking at their own roster and saying, well, I'm better than this guy, I'm doing better than this guy, and they just kind of make sure they're getting their playing time. And that can permeate the, I'm happy to be here, and you're not really ready to compete. Last night, somebody asked Merrill Kelly, what's the difference in his mentality this year and last year? Or what is the difference? That was it. Just what's the difference between the 2 years? And he said, my mentality. I think sometimes I got happy being here, and I was happy to be on the team, and now I'm here to get people out. And I'm kind of a loose quote, but it was such a strong statement. What do you see as the difference between Merrill Kelly?
Yeah, well, Merrill was such a unique case last year because I think he was 29 years old or so, 30 years old. He'd had a lot of success in Korea as a, you know, as a Korean major leaguer, for lack of a better term. And, but he had never been a major leaguer over here. So he was coming over here almost as, you know, he looked like a major league veteran, but he wasn't. He'd actually never pitched here. So he still had to kind of find his grounding. So I would agree with Merrill. I think he's at a totally different place comfort-wise right now. I think he feels like he belongs from day one. He's been comfortable since the first day of our, you know, original spring training this year. Whereas I think last year he was still feeling his way through. Like, hey, I know I had a lot of success in Korea, but can I do it over here? I think he had to probably continue to prove that to himself. And right now this year, I think he just watching the way he acts, he executes, he pitches, he certainly, you know, feels like he's a big part of it and that he's this is where he should be pitching. No question about it.
Other than Merrill Kelly, of course, from a talent evaluator's perspective, give me a rundown of the rotation and what you've seen so far.
Yeah, so Bum obviously gets the ball tonight. He had a really strong opening day start for us, obviously, in that sixth inning, I believe, is 0-0. Got to that Hosmer matchup, and Hosmer took a good swing on a pitch. Robbie Ray, you know, he's been excellent for us all summer camp. You know, explosive stuff. He's, you know, gotten in incredible shape. He looks unbelievable. Shortened his arm swing up in the back a little bit. I think it's added to some of his deception and helped his command as well. You know, Zach Gallen's obviously a young guy we think very highly of. Again, four above average pitches, you know, very confident pitcher. You know, I think you'll see Zach be a lot more aggressive in his next start in the strike zone. And then Luke Weaver, you know, is as talented as any pitcher in baseball. He's, you know, fastballs up to 97 miles per hour. He's an incredible athlete. He's got that plus changeup that gets swings and misses. So we feel great about the rotation. We certainly think it's a strength of our team. And then behind those guys, you have someone like Alex Young, who was great for us last year and came in and helped us win a game on Sunday in San Diego. So we feel like the starting pitching is a definite strength of the Diamondbacks. We think we're six or seven deep, and these guys are going to help us all season.
This is Jared Porter. He's senior vice president of the team, assistant general manager, joining Doug and Wolf on our D-backs front office focus. Before you got here, Jared, a long time ago, there's a two-word phrase that every fan shakes his head when he hears, and it was organizational advocacy. I want to know from you, is there an organizational urgency? Because we're seeing a side of Torrey Lovello that we've never seen. Game one, it's relaxed. It's game one. Game two, it was, hey, they saw 100 more pitches than we did, and there was a little, you know, frustration there. Game three, he gets ejected. Game five, we've already had a lineup change with Cole Calhoun being bumped up to number two. I love it. But is that his doing, or is there more of an organizational urgency going on where everybody's feeling it in a 60-game schedule?
It's a good question. You know, Torrey makes all the decisions, you know, when it comes to lineup and those types of things. We discuss them, and we've been discussing those things for a while. That the biggest thing there was Cole sees so many pitches. Even last night in that first inning, he struck out, but I think he saw eight pitches in that strikeout. Like, We believe that, you know, kind of passing the bat, passing the baton, passing the torch, so to speak, like linking at bats together, kind of a relentless offensive approach is contagious and has to start at the beginning. And we thought putting Cole up there would help us do that a little bit more. And it did work last night. As far as the urgency thing, I mean, I don't think necessarily it's a 60-game season. So I think all 30 teams are likely feeling through it and trying to figure out, like, hey, what does a 60-game season mean? Like, how should we treat it? Should we treat every game like it's worth, you know, 2X? Or should we feel like, say we're on August 1st already? Or how does it work? So, you know, I don't think the urgency has really changed. I think we feel like we have a good team. We feel like we have really good players who should be able to execute on all sides of the baseball, and we want to win games. So if Torrey's kind of trying to push some buttons here and there, like, nobody has a better feel for that than him, in my opinion. He's such a strong communicator. These guys, you know, like him so much. There's such strong relationships that he has the ability to do those kind of things. So I think it's great. And last night it worked so far.
Jared, just watching Archie Bradley pitch last night, he was electric. I mean, he just took the ball and reared back. 14 pitches, 12 four-seam fastballs. Can he get away with doing that?
Yeah, when he has the kind of life he had last night, I mean, he was really commanding the baseball very well. He was deceptive. He had finish on his fastball, you know, which means I think that it looks a lot harder to the hitter than maybe the sheer velocity says. And he throws hard to begin with, and he also commanded his changeup to Gallo there at the end, which was great to see. Threw him two really good changeups, one to end the game on that swing and miss. So, yeah, I mean, when Archie's aggressive and he goes at it, he's as good as any reliever in the game. And, you know, he's a huge part of our team, not only from a talent standpoint, from a makeup standpoint. He's been one of the guys who's kind of stepped up and stood up with the whole health and safety thing, making sure his teammates are doing the right thing. So Archie's been huge for us, definitely one of our team leaders.
What did you or Mike Hazen or Torrey Lovello, anybody in the management side of things, how did you guys handle the Miami Marlins situation only as it relates to the Diamondbacks? I know, you know, you're it's commenting on other issues of other organizations is not your cup of tea, but you had to have looked at it and said, okay, guys, you know, what do you guys see? How did you relay that information and how did you use the Marlins outbreak for your own organization?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, we've been over the top as far as being careful goes. I mean, we're taking extra buses. The guys are never taking their masks off. You know, we're socially distancing. We're constantly doing stuff. I think the Marlins, more than anything, is just a reminder of how quickly something can spread and how quickly something can happen. So despite the fact that, you know, we feel like we're doing a really good job with this, you know, one little hiccup, so to speak, can lead to a big outbreak. So that, I think more than anything, it's a reminder, be careful. Like this can happen quickly. Be smart. And our group is doing a great job of that. You know, I feel like, you know, continuing on the path we're on, but just keeping these reminders in the back of our mind. Hey, look, this can happen if you aren't smart and you aren't safe, and not only from a baseball perspective, just from a public health perspective. Like this is a dangerous virus, and we don't want anyone or any families or anyone outside of the Diamondbacks catching this from any of our people. So that's the mindset we've taken, and we're going to continue to do that.
Yeah, it's a serious situation, is it not? Jared, thank you, man. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great to be back on.
Absolutely. We feel the same way about you. There's Jared Porter, assistant general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Doug and Wolf, and that's the front office focus. It's every Wednesday at 8:45. We got a lot more D-backs coming up, too. At 9:15, Merrill Kelly will also join us live from Texas to be able to talk about that fantastic outing, a little bit of a no-no going on, and go 7 2/3 with 7 Ks and only 104 pitches. Up next, the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury, he's got Kyler, he's got DeAndre Hopkins, and the COVID world gave him plenty of time. So what did he draw up? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.